Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to ScaryCast. This is Dr. John Stamey. It was so good to be with you here tonight. We've got a great show, got a few interesting things lined up, and we've got the whole crowd with us. We've got our special guest, who I will introduce shortly. We've got, of course, I say hello to everybody first. So, ladies first, Robin, how are you doing tonight?
I am good. Glad to have everybody here.
Great. I'm glad to be here. I'm barely made it. Apparently, I have some drivers that need to be updated, and that's my problem. But we'll get to those after ScaryCast tonight. Good to have you with us. Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling, how are you doing tonight?
Great to be here with you all tonight, this evening.
We are glad to have you here with us. We really are. Thank you very much. From the world capital of murder, Harlan, Kentucky, the one and only Tony Filosi, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing great, John. I'm looking forward to the show.
We are too. And by the way, I'm going to go ahead and announce next week you go from co-host to guest, because you got a brand new book out about the dastardly Manzo Shepherd, and you're going to be our guest next week to talk about your new book. We're pretty happy about that. And
happy to get Manzo out too, John. It's been a labor of love for several years getting out. I'm excited about talking about it, and I've heard Manzo called a lot of things, but never dastardly. But I'm going to steal that. From here forward, he's going to be the dastardly Manzo Shepherd.
Okay, now don't get his spirit mad at me. I don't want to be yelled at by a dude from beyond. But yeah, it'll be a lot of fun having you as you switch from co-host to guest next week. It'll be a lot of fun. And our man in Hollywood, Devin Tate, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, Dr. John and everybody. It's so good to be here with you on my birthday, I might add.
That's right.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
So what we're going to do...
Happy birthday, Devin.
As soon as I introduce our call-in guest, because she's going to participate in one of our little events here right now. I think it is time. And, of course, our guest is Karak. He's here. He's going to be talking about Champ, the Lake Champlain Monster. And I never really have heard much about him. And I am totally excited. I think he's going to be working on a documentary about him. Karak, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, John. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. And then, of course, our buddy, the one and only from Arkansas. Thank you, Brady Hicks, for having this nice lady on your show so I could meet her. The one and only Granny Hulkster. How you doing, Granny?
Well, I'm wonderful. How's everybody doing tonight? Good to talk to everybody.
Yeah, we're glad you're here.
Well, hey, Stro. I've been thinking about you the last, few days, my friend. I've been thinking about you and your family. So y'all been our thoughts and prayers.
Thank you so much. Lady.
Well, I had to give you a really big plug the other day, Stro. We were talking about you on the morning after, and believe me, even though I want to share this with everybody. I have never met Stro in person. I only know him through Facebook, through WCW Retro, through In the Room, through ScaryCast. But I tell you, this man has got a heart of gold. Would reach out to anybody that needed help. And I tell you, and he would give you the shirt off of his back, even if he didn't have one to give to you. That's how I feel about you, Stro.
No, thank you so much, Granny.
Well,
we love
you too. You're an awesome person, and I can't wait. I cannot wait to get to meet you in person one day, because I tell you, I'm going to get you to Arkansas one day. You and Chaz Moretti, I'm going to get you guys to Arkansas one day. One day I'm going to make it happen, and I tell you, you know.
Be great.
It's going to be amazing. It's going to be amazing. So.
Can't wait.
Well, I'm going to be there too, and we're all going to go out.
Well,
and walk
of course, Dr. John.
Exactly,
of course, yeah, that's
right.
Exactly
what we're.
Well,
doing.
We got plenty of Waffle Houses around here. So.
I'll bet. All right. So, what I want to do first, we have to celebrate because Devin Tate has been around the earth one additional time since we've been doing these shows. So, I'm going to try to lead us in happy birthday to Devin, and if everybody would join in quickly so that you are not tortured by my voice, okay? So we're gonna do happy birthday to Devin on the count of three, and so on the count of three, take a breath and sing with me. So one, two, three. Happy birthday,
happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you. That was a great rendition. I loved hearing all of you sing in there.
When you produce your next album, Devin, I'm going to send you the MP3 of this, and maybe you can cover it up a little bit and stick that on your next DVD. Who knows? But
awesome.
We love you. We're glad you're here with us. It's just not the same without our man in Hollywood. Our man in Hollywood, which comes from, for those that don't know, Graham Greene wrote the great book Our Man in Havana. He was stopped by the Cuban police because he had these super secret double knot plans. They turned out to be plans for a vacuum cleaner, but they put him in jail and all kinds of funny stuff ensued. One of the greatest movies in 1947. And, you know, of course it was great. I was on the set there when they were making it, you know, being as old as, you know, being over 100 myself. So anyway, thank you for being with us, Devin. We don't want anybody else from Hollywood there unless you get one of your guests that you brought on, and you brought on some real whoppers. You really have. So number one, thanks a lot. Number two,
thank you.
I thought I would ask the co-hosts and our guest from Arkansas that we just think you're great, Granny. You're kind of part of the family, you know. And I called her this afternoon. I said, I thought since we just had Father's Day, and our dads do mean a lot to us, I wanted to ask our co-hosts if they've just got anything they'd like to share about their dad that's good, because I know my dad was great. I got something I can't wait to share. And so here's what we will do. It will be ladies first. We will be our guest, which is Granny, first, and then we will ask Robin, and then of the guys, we're going to ask Papa Stroh, and then Tony, and then Devin, and I'll bring up the rear, and just something just that you'd like to say about your dad. I hope this is going to turn out well, because we all have. I asked everybody, do you have good thoughts about your dad, and I think everybody said yes. So, in order, our guest from Arkansas, Granny Hulkster. What you got to say about your dad? You got a story?
Well, let me tell you. I got a couple quick stories about my daddy. God rest his soul. My daddy was born in 1933, and he worked for the telephone company for 25 plus years before he actually retired. We moved to Arkansas in 1988. I lived with my mom and my dad. I was a single mom at the time. So my son, you know, my daddy was a father figure to my son before I got married to the man that I'm married to now. And so my daddy wasn't a huggy person, but I knew that daddy loved us for what he did for us, you know. And of course, when Anthony would come up and say to him, Grandpa, I love you, he'd always tell Anthony, I love you too, you know, which daddy didn't say that a lot, but that's okay, because that's the way my daddy was, you know. But I mean, he was a good man. He was a hardworking man. I remember when Anthony was born. Anthony was born January 23rd, 1987. So I think he was born around the time of the Emmy Awards or something like that. And my dad started calling him Oscar. I said, Oscar? I said, his name's Anthony. Where did you get the name of Oscar from? And he says, well, it's better than calling him the Emmy Award, you know. So moving along, you know, I went to work for Walmart in 1999. And I worked for Walmart for like 14 years. And he said, I had a dream about you last night. And I said, what? And he says, I dreamt you quit Walmart and went to work for driving a Budweiser beer truck. And I said, beer truck? I said, I don't even drink beer. You know, I said, what did you eat before you went to bed that night? You know, I mean, he was like, he had the weirdest dream. But, you know, my son graduated from high school in 2005. So, and daddy passed away July 15th of 2004. And so I knew, but I was so blessed that he actually got to see pictures of my son in his cap and gown from high school, you know, before my son got, you know, before my son graduated in 2005, he at least got to see pictures, senior pictures of my son, you know, and everything before he passed. Daddy was an amazing man. And I just got this really quick thing to add, you know, when we brought hospice in for my dad about a month before he died, and he started getting really, you know, he was really sick. He'd been sick for a long time, health issues. He actually had congestive heart failure is what he passed from. But I remember one day he was just saying something just off the wall, and I was sitting on the bed next to him. I said, Daddy, I love you. And I kissed him on his cheek, and I said, Daddy, I love you. And he looked at me and squeezed my hand, and he said, I love you too. And that's something that I'm never going to forget. Because like I said, Daddy didn't say I love you a lot. I mean, he showed us his love for what he did for us. But that's kind of, in a nutshell, you know, that's my daddy, you know. And before we had a big family little get-together thing July 4th, and, you know, we fixed brats and potato salad and cheeseburgers, you know. And he says, he told my family, he says, you know what? He says, I'm not supposed to have any of this, but I'm going to sit and I'm going to enjoy every bit of it. And he asked me, he said, will you make your potato salad that I love so much? And I said, of course. And so I made my potato salad. Now, that's when David and I got together, the man that I'm married to now, you know, and everything, because we got together in 2003. So David had the opportunity to get to know my dad, and they would sit and watch Wheel of Fortune together, you know, on TV and stuff. They both like Wheel of Fortune. So, but in a nutshell, that's my daddy, you know, and I love him. I loved him, and very much, and I miss him, and he'll be gone 16 years next month on the 15th of July. But, you know, Stro, I love you, man. I know how hard it was for you. You know, your dad, I know your dad had dealt with some health issues, you know, and everything. And I know just him passing, you know, right before Father's Day. But, you know, you and your family have been in my prayers and thoughts each and every day, my friend. And we love you, Stro. And God bless you and your family.
Love you too. Thank you so much. Thank you, Granny.
That was wonderful, Granny.
You're welcome.
I knew you would say exactly the right thing. That's why I called you this afternoon. And another lady,
well, I appreciate
the queen
it.
Of sure, the queen of Scarycast. I knew she would always have the right thing to say, so I had to call her too. And how are you today? As we talk about our dads, Robin.
I'm good. I keep getting a lot of stuff, Rob. I'm not trying to upset anybody. It's just it's not going to stop till I tell you. I'm supposed to tell you that your dad is still there, that he's still proud of you, and he's staying close. He seems to have like a real soft energy to him.
I was very close to Daddy.
That sounds like him. he always
okay,
light up the room, you know.
Yeah, he does. He's got this really soft, warm energy about him. And I'm sorry because some people want to hear from their loved ones, other people don't, and it's kind of hard for me to judge. But the thing is if I don't say it when they tell me to, they don't leave me alone. He's
right.
Laughing now.
that he sounds a lot like him. Yeah.
Because you're always going to be his. He says you're always going to be his little boy. So I don't know if he ever used to call you that or not, but that's what he just said.
Oh, yeah.
at 240 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because he was very specific. He said to make sure that you know that you will always be his little boy. And for some reason, he thinks that means something to you.
Oh, yeah, it really does. It really does.
Okay.
You would always remind me.
Yeah, because those were the words that he chose. That wasn't me improvising. That was what his words were. And he said I had to be specific and say those exact words. He says to tell you, all you have to do is look over your shoulder because he's not very far away.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Okay. He's fine, by the way. He says he feels great. Nothing hurts. And he's fine. He's at peace. So you don't have to worry about him, but he's not going very far. He's staying near you.
I feel him from time to time, you know.
Yeah, you will, because he said he's not going very far. He's keeping an eye on you. He says you're always going to be his little boy, and that's what dads do.
Right.
So my dad really stepped up because I was divorced, and my ex-husband didn't want anything to do with kids. And so my dad was kind of like, yeah, he was my dad, but he was also a grandpa, but he was also their dad. Like, he just jumped into that role, you know, and it didn't matter who I had in my life that was a father figure for the kids. And my dad was one that, you know, he was the overseer. And it would drive me crazy sometimes because he would be like, no, you need to do things this way or this way or this way. And I'm like, no, Dad, I have to do it this way. But I don't think we appreciate all of that until it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
But he was so cool.
You were right.
I mean, he really was. My kids, as far as they're concerned, he walked on water. Even if they got in trouble, it didn't matter. Because that was Grandpa, and they admired everything about him. And it was so funny because we just were talking. A friend of mine, we're talking the other day because we were talking about different cars. And when I went to get my first car, I was so excited I was going to get a car. I had sold one of my horses, and I was going to use that money. I was going to get a car. And I was, like, so excited. And I thought, okay, I'll start checking in the paper. You know, you didn't have the internet back then. And I was looking for a car. And he would have none of it. He had to pick out this car. And I said, Dad, I'm the one that's buying it. Why are you picking out this car? He bought me this car. It was like a freaking tank. It was the old Caprice Classics that literally were like a pontoon boat. And this was the world's ugliest car known to mankind. And I said to him, why? Like, why, oh, why? Look at everybody else has these cute little cars. And why? He wanted as much metal around me as humanly possible in case there was an accident. But I never forgot that because I thought, good God, I look like I was driving a tank into battle every time I drove it because it was so huge. I think it got 6 miles to a gallon. It was just the worst thing on the planet. I'm still here. But he was bound and determined. And then he had this pickup truck, and I loved his pickup truck. And it was an old Ford. And I remember when that car died, he gave me that truck because, he wanted as much metal around me as possible. And when my kids got old enough to drive, my mom my grandma was the same way. They'd get a car, they'd pay it off, and they'd pass it on down the line to either one of us kids or one of the grandkids. And my dad would just have a fit because he wanted the kids to – he'd go buy him a car, but my mom would always get these little tiny compacts. Cars, and he wanted none of that. The kids were not going to be safe enough in that. I mean, it was hysterical. So he would go pick out these cars for him, and they were just like the cars he picked out for me, and they'd be like these big boats. And he would love it because
you're still here. So that's what matters.
Well,
he accomplished his goal.
They always lived in the city, and anybody that knows me knows I don't do city. I don't like city. I've never liked city. Probably never will. It's all right to shop in, but then I went out of it. And so he would love to come to my house because he'd go outside, and as much as he was a city guy, he would love to go outside and he'd have the bonfires and the cookouts. And he'd go outside and just spend hours raking up leaves and branches and mulch. And I mean, that was just a big deal to him. He loved it. I can remember him as a kid taking us all over the place, canoe trips and camping trips, and he was not what I would call Mr. Camper, more my mother, but they did it anyway. So, yeah, he was a jack of all trades. He retired from General Motors Plant Protection, but his jack of all trades was he was a dad, he was a grandpa, but then he was a dad to them. I mean, it was kind of like this borderline he walked. And my kids to this day, they still idolize him.
Well, that's great. And as they should. So thank you very much, Robin, for that those kind stories about your dad. Papa Stroh, our buddy, do you have anything you'd like to share with us?
Well, where do I begin? My dad, you guys would have really, really enjoyed my dad. I touched on it earlier. I mean, he was the kind of person that lit up a room. And, you know, he's seen a lot of tragedy, a lot of hardship in his life. When he entered the Army to fight in the war of Vietnam on the front lines, and he saw, you know, he dealt with Agent Orange and all the, like, napalm and all the dangerous terrain that everyone in the front lines went through. I saw a lot of terrible things, and he did it all. In fact, the story itself of him going to Army was pretty inspirational too, because polio. Yeah, he had polio, and he was determined to be in the Army to fight in the war, to serve our country, fight for our country. And he got in the Army having polio and fought in the front lines. And I mean, that in itself is a huge inspiration there. I mean, talking about courage. But all the tragedies he saw in his life, whether it was he was fighting for his country, serving his country, fighting for his family, you know, fighting for his life, and in recent years, through all he's been through, he always came back home with a smile. Always, you know, he can make a friend out of just most anybody. I mean, that's the way he was. And even when times he would get agitated, upset, you know, he would try to hug with a person. He would try to talk to the person and try to make things right. You know, that's just the way he was, because he would hate to stay mad at or irritated situation. And like I said, he had a great sense of humor, and he looked out for me. He was like one of my biggest supporters. And another day that went by that I was proud of my dad and what he did. And even to the last time I saw him, I mean, at the hospital, I mean, he was good spirits. He was even telling the nurse not to worry about a thing, that things were going to be okay. And I mean, that was the spirit. I mean, and he always, you know, you always have that aura about him. And I cherish every moment I had with my dad, and I know he's in a better place. No more suffering, and I know his spirit lives on, because that aura that he had was just huge. It was just huge. And
yeah,
to make good out of bad things, it's not an easy thing to do, and he did it every day of his life. And so, I mean, it really taught us, those around him, a lot of lessons. You know, like, no matter what hardships we go through in life, good, you know, with good things or bad things, you know, we always should look for the good. And, you know, looking for the good can make all the difference in the world. It really can. But, yeah, I'm really proud of my dad. Mr. Morty, and, you know, I just...
Well, he's very
hope,
proud, Rob. He's very, very proud of you. And you're right about his energy, because it feels a lot different than a lot of people's. It's very soft, warm, and comforting.
And to endure what he's endured, he's got to be one of the strongest individuals I've known my entire life. and to come back from he came back from so much, and to keep getting stronger, and to love his family, love his friends. I mean, anybody was around the guy. I mean, love the guy, and so
yeah.
Just you know what I mean.
He has what the Bigfoot would call pure of heart.
Yeah, no doubt. But yeah, I wish you guys could have talked. Got to have met him. I mean, I know some of you have, like Dr. John, has had the opportunity to meet him and everything. But I wish you guys, the rest of you guys, could have met him, because you really would have loved him. I mean, I've been bragged that my folks are a lot nicer than I am, right? And I used to get picked on and ribbed when I was younger, you know, for being too nice, whether it be, you know, doing the wrestling or acting or any of the things I was doing. But, you know, I got up to my dad. This is the way, you know what I mean? It was infectious. That's the way he was.
Sounds like an amazing man.
He was. Rob,
I agree.
Rob, can I tell just a real quick story about one of the times that I met him?
Sure.
If you don't mind. Because I had driven from Myrtle Beach, where I live, to Kinston, North Carolina. I don't know if you know, Kinston is the end of the earth. Is that correct, Rob? From Myrtle Beach.
Pretty much.
It just, oh my gosh. And so, and I was going to do his merch table for him that night, but I just couldn't find the place. I mean, even GPS wasn't working. It couldn't figure out what was going on in Kinston. So I finally got there, and I walked in, and I walked around everybody's tables, and, you know, I got there about 30 minutes beforehand, and there was this nice couple, very pleasant-looking couple. I said, oh, he got somebody, because I wasn't here. But anyway, I introduced myself. I said, I'm John Stamey, and I'm from Myrtle Beach, and Rob is a really good friend of mine. He comes to my Comic-Cons and everything, and I'm late, and I said, may I sit down here with you? And they said, well, sure. And your dad said, you don't know who we are, do you? I said, no. He said, well, I'm Rob's dad, and this is his mother. I said, are you okay if I sit here? Because Rob's such a great guy. I'd said a whole bunch of stuff about you, Rob, and it was all good. I didn't know who I was talking to. It turned out to be your parents. And so your dad said, well, do you not have a Stro shirt? I said, yeah, I do. I just put this one on. He said, oh, I got to give you a Stro shirt right now, because you got to have one on. And he handed me a shirt, and that was a gift from him. And, Rob, I still got that shirt, and I really don't wear it because your dad gave it to me, and I want to keep it in good shape. So he gave it to me, and I've still got it to this day. And your mom was just the nicest person. Your dad was incredible. We laughed about you. We talked about you. I heard stories about it. It was great. And I knew you a lot more and a lot better after I sat there with your parents for 2 hours and you were wrestling, who was it? It was Barbarian. You were wrestling Barbarian that night. And it was just, I mean, what there could not have been a better Papa Stro night for me in my life than watching you wrestle with the Barbarian and hanging out with your parents. And I've never exactly put it that way to you, but I tell you what a nice bunch of people. Golly. And anyway, so, you know, Robin, we're just glad to have you here, and thank you so much for being part of ScaryCast. And we got a lot of great things coming out. We're merging it so that everybody will know we're merging it a little bit with Murder 123. That's why Tony's going to do a Murder 123 next week with us, and then we'll have somebody else. And now Tony Filosi. Now, Rob, is it cool to go on? You got anything else you want to say, or are you good for now?
Oh, I'm fine. I just hope I didn't take too much time on my
end. No, you're awesome.
Rob,
thank
whatever you took was perfect. That was all that mattered. Tony Filosi, then Devin, and then me. Tony Filosi, what have you got?
Well, first off, I want to say, Papa Stro, I'm very, very sorry for your loss, man. I really am. And as far as, like, my father, you know, I really don't have a lot to say except that he taught me how to survive in a tough world. I mean, that's about it. I mean, we were in business together for a long time. not super close, but he taught me a lot of things about life. And, you know, I'm still applying those today.
It's good to have a dad that'll teach you some things, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you so very much. And Our Man in Hollywood. Devin, we're going to have to make a movie about that called Our Man in Hollywood. Now, we just have to. So,
yeah.
So what have you got, Devin?
That'd be great. Yeah, I just talked to my dad a little bit ago. I do want to extend my condolences to Papa Stro, too. My heart really goes out to you and your whole family. When I think about my dad, he grew up on a farm. He grew up on the family farmstead. You know, my great-great-grandparents homesteaded in Kansas, so we were the first people to have that land, and it went through the generations, so there's a lot of tradition in my family. But because this is Scary Cast, I think the story I wanted to tell about my dad is him and my mom and some of the other older, the parents in my family, they got together and threw a big Halloween party one year. And I don't know if you guys have, when you're a kid, if anyone did the body parts game, it's like, you tell the story about a dead man with, it's like a gory Halloween story, and the lights are low, so you pass around these bowls of food, and it freaks the kids out, because you tell the kids it's like eyeballs or whatever. So I just can't believe my dad did that. It's not, he's not normally like a horror movie fan or anything like that, but I always remember him telling that story, and I think he might have tipped me off, so that I wasn't too scared, but I got to watch all the other kids get scared.
I remember those body parts from the armory in Morganton when we had our Halloween festival. Yes, those were grapes. Those were peeled grapes there in Morganton.
Yep.
Well, thank you. Yep. Thank you, Devin. Is that your story?
That is my story. Yeah. I love my dad, and thank you for letting me talk a little bit about him.
Absolutely. I've got the shortest, but the best story. I had a perfect childhood. My parents were always there every night. They were together all the time. And when my mother had a stroke, I was, about 35, and she waited at the house till my dad and I got home. I said, "You should have called the ambulance." She said, "No, I wanted you and your father to take me to the hospital. I was scared. I didn't want to go without you." And then my dad and I were sitting there as they were checking her out, and the doctor came out and said, "We're going to keep her tonight, make sure she's okay." And my dad looked at me when the doctor walked away. He said, "Son, this is going to be the first night since we've been married that I have been away from your mother, except when I was on a business trip. And it's very strange." I said, "That's all right. I'm going to drive you home, so you don't worry about it." I realized that I was the luckiest person in the world, because I know I had a lot of friends whose parents had problems. Well, mine argued some, but they were always, they'd argue together. And I finally realized they would never come whine about the other one to me. They would always argue with each other, get it settled, give each other a hug and a kiss, and go away. And I realized that my father was one half of the parents that gave me the world's greatest childhood. So I got to thank both of them, and that's what my dad did for me. And I got to say that I appreciate everybody coming forth with a story. I appreciate you all being here. This is a great family. This is our extra special family that we get together once a week.
Dr. John.
We call each other. I call it. Pardon?
No, I know. I was just going to ask you something when you got done talking.
I'm done.
Okay. Well, being that this is Scary Cast, I got to thinking about this while I was sitting everybody listening, and I guess what made me think of it when Devin was talking about the Halloween party that his parents threw, being that this is Scary Cast, and everything. And this is something that really happened after my daddy passed away. My mom, she would always leave the bathroom light on, even after daddy was gone. And she got up one night and went to the restroom, and daddy had his electric razor is still on the sink where it sat, and, you know, the cap that covers the electric razor, it was actually laying in the sink. And my mom, she looked at that, and she thought, now, how did that get in the sink? And she heard a noise in the living room, and she walked into the living room, and my dad's recliner was sitting there rocking. And when she told me this story, I said, well, Mom, Daddy just wanted to shave. He had to go shave, you know. So I wanted to share that really quick, you know, since it's in honor of Scary Cast. So.
Thank you. And Granny,
thank
we wouldn't
you, John,
have, I
Dr.
Didn't
John,
wanna,
for,
didn't
thank you
have
for including me in this
you.
Tonight. And I appreciate you guys. I hate to drop off, guys, but I actually have to get on my other podcast that I help with on Monday nights. But I hope you have a great rest of the show, Stro. I love you. Oh, by the way, Stro, we're not going to do the morning after tomorrow because I've got a couple appointments and Brady's got to work. So we just decided to take the day off tomorrow. So I just wanted to know that. So I'll probably try to talk to you tomorrow night on In the Room.
Okay. Great.
I'm glad you made it, Granny.
Well, yeah, Dr. John called me this afternoon, and it's a true honor to be a part of such, you know, I consider, even though I've never met any of you, I consider you all family. You know, you all are my family, and
you.
I love each and every one
Lord
of you. So,
so
God bless you all, and have a great rest of the show, and we'll talk to you soon.
You take care.
Absolutely. I'll see you in the room. I'm going to come in there tomorrow. So thanks, Granny, and
Alrighty.
Thanks, everybody. Now. And just this has been great, yes. So now, Karak, you are our guest tonight. You've now seen that this is just family, and we get together once a week, and we talk about cool stuff, what we think's cool. So first of all, I'm going to bring you back into the fold. How are you doing tonight?
Doing very well. It was very interesting to hear you guys talk to each other. I like the way that you guys have a very – I think it really helps not only, I'm sure, the way in which you interact, but also your podcast that you bounce off each other quite well.
Yeah, we're just
thank you.
Just good friends, and this is our other family. So, the reason I have you on here, I want to go ahead and compliment you. I'm in a group that you created a long time ago, and it's a very active group on Facebook. It's a very positive and interesting group. It's about cryptids. It's about education. Mm-hmm. Me being a former college professor and me liking, just love cryptids. They're around me all the time. And I asked you to be at the Lizard Man Festival about a week ago with Papa Stro. Stro was incredible. He did this. He does this movie night on Friday night called The Stro Zone. You know, Rod Serling should have called his The Stro Zone. That's all I got to say, Papa Stro. So he was there, and then he did that legendary, that legendary Q&A on Saturday, which was wonderful. But then you produced. I didn't really know you, but you seemed like a smart guy, and I am attracted to smart people. Everybody on this show, I think, is really smart. And I only invite people on that I think is smart. You did the greatest presentation on Lizard Man and some stuff about it. You had like an A-plus rated, you know, PowerPoint. It was so good. And I said, you know what, I want to get this guy on my show. And then all of a sudden we became the Friday. By the way, big props to Brady Hicks, who Papa Stro introduced me to. And we are, and Scary Cast is not only broadcast on Monday nights, it is now broadcast on Friday nights on the VOC Nation. We're so happy to be on there, and it's going to be great. We're right before Papa Stro's The Stro Zone. So at the end of this, Papa Stro, if you would please do it, I want you to do a promo for the Stro Zone, because everybody listening to it on Friday night needs to go right over there and listen to you and hang out with Dorothy. Would you mind doing that for us when we're done?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you.
Great. So that will always be our closing promo now on Scary Cast / Murder 123. Anyway, I've told about Karak. He loves cryptids. He likes to teach. He does a great job on his podcast. So, buddy, the floor is yours. tell us why we're talking about Champ, which is one of the cryptids I don't know much about. I did a little bit of research before the show, but tell us about Champ and tell us about what you're anticipating doing. The floor, sir, is yours, and our co-hosts, they'll just jump in and ask you a question when they have one.
Mm.
All right, sir.
Well, I'd like
it's all yours.
I'd like to first thank you so much for the opportunity, not only to do this podcast, but also for the Lizardman Festival presentation. It was such a really like a childhood dream of mine to be able to publicly speak about things like this in a presentation format, and it was just so exciting. And I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity. Really, just an utterly flattering experience. Now, as for Champ is a really interesting subject, because Champ is one of those things that really is kind of on, what would you say, it's on the cusp of something significant. That's the hunch that I get from all this. And the reason I think that is because even though, like a lot of other cryptids, it has kind of this very long, you know, thousands of years going back into native dominated times, history recently, especially within the last 25 years or so, there's been such a good deal of scientific methodology involved in the hunt for Champ, you could say, that there's a lot of very interesting evidence being turned up. So what is Champ? Champ is essentially, I think, a fair term that everyone can kind of comprehend with the America's Loch Ness Monster. Lake Champlain is one of America's largest lakes and located right in between Canada, Vermont, and New York. It lies right on the borderline of those three areas. And so you have kind of a bit of a cultural mix-up there. But one of the things that all these three areas are experiencing are these sightings of this kind of reptilian, semi-serpentine lake monsters, which are called Champ because the name Lake Champlain is shortened for Champ's nickname, sort of.
Hey, real quick. I looked online and I saw a ton of pictures. I mean, not like the Loch Ness Monster where there are four pictures. I saw a ton of pictures. I know some of them were photoshopped, but I saw a lot of them. And is that correct? There seems to be a lot of photographic evidence, far more than the Loch Ness Monster. Is that correct?
There certainly is more photographic evidence that hasn't been, I guess the right word would be disproven. A lot of Loch Ness Monster photos turn out to be rocks or wave obstructions, et cetera, and we kind of come to a consensus on those fairly quickly a lot of the time. But not so with Champ. With Champ, especially with video, actually, we have several pieces of footage and several photographs. The Mansi photograph is one that people will come across the most often, I would say, in their search online, that really doesn't have a proper explanation yet. For anyone interested, they should look up the Olson video, which is this video from, I think, 2014 on the shores of Lake Champlain, I think on the Vermont side, where this animal in the water is swimming by, and it's larger than anything that's supposed to be in the lake. It actually seems to be moving parts of its body independently as it propels itself forward. So you can see the head kind of stretch itself forward and kind of curl back inward a few times, and it actually ends up submerging itself slowly beneath the surface. And further research in that area has concluded that there might actually be these underwater passages there that large animals, are actually frequenting. And perhaps if this was one of these Champ animals, these creatures are also using these underwater passageways to travel in and from the lake.
So, okay, now yeah, who was did you say the Zoransky video?
The Mansi, Sandra Mansi, is for the photograph, which is still the most in terms of full photographs or full videos. The Sandra Mansi photograph is still probably the best one that is out there because it's such an anomaly of an image. There's no way that it's a wave, and there's no way that it's a rock. The only thing that has made any sense for a natural explanation is that perhaps this is one of these events where a piece of driftwood below the surface has been propelled upward by one of these underwater currents for a few moments, then has submerged again. The problem being that this isn't really something that looks to be the texture of driftwood and the actual position of the object as well as the recounting of the sighting which suggests that it isn't an object and not an animal, but it certainly suggests that we're looking at a living subject. And if it is a living subject, it's not any kind of species that we're aware of, that's for sure. So, yeah.
Now, the reason I mentioned Zaransky is there's a fellow by that last name, and he wrote an article in Yankee Travel magazine in 1986, and he has made it his life's goal to find Champ. I don't know if you've heard of him or not, but I'm going to try to find him. Have you ever heard of him?
I may have once or twice. I'm not sure if I'm very well versed on him, though.
Well, what I'm going to do is he, in my opinion, he would be just an incredible guest on here. And if I can get him, I want to have you on here with us. And I think he might be really good for your video. For your project. So I'm going to try to find him and get us all hooked up. Okay.
That sounds fantastic. Thank you.
So you got some, buddy, you got some free help from Scary Cash.
Thank you so much. That actually brings me to the project itself. So for people who follow my channel or the group, they'll know that in August I'm filming a documentary called Release the Baudet Film at Lake Champlain. Now, the Baudet Film is this piece of footage that was shot in 2005 by a pair of locals, Pete Baudet and Dick Oppelter. I don't know if they're related. I think Oppelter might be Baudet's father-in-law, but I might be wrong on that one. But they're at least people who know each other, and they're both fishermen. And according to their account, these two champ animals came very close to the side of their boat, so close that you could see them quite clearly below the water. And Pete Baudet shot a video of what happened. Unfortunately, through somewhat unclear reasoning, the full footage has been sold to a legal party in New Jersey and right now isn't available to the public unless you pay $10,000 or more for it. In fact, $20,000 or more has been the up price. But there were around, about 5 seconds of it that were aired on, I think it was ABC in 2006 or 2005. And that footage alone is actually exceedingly impressive. It's for people who've seen the full footage, there are a few researchers who have. Most agree that that's not exactly the best shot of the film, but that it's one of the best. And, you know, enhancements of this piece of footage really are incredible. It's very clear that there's something below the surface of the water. What exactly it is, I'm not sure, but it's a moving object of some kind. And it certainly resembles what people describe as champ. And the point of the documentary isn't just to kind of give a very detailed investigation into the champ phenomenon or just to investigate the Baudet film itself, but it's also something of a call to action because, of course, there's all kinds of legal rights to be holding, you know, this footage. There's no legal problem with that. I think, though, that there is a moral issue with selling this footage for over $20,000. Because we're looking, with any piece of footage, we're looking at two possibilities. Either this is a real piece of footage and these are real animals in this film, or we're looking at a hoax. Now, if it's a hoax, it's morally wrong to make someone pay $20,000 for a film that means nothing. That's pretty obvious. But what might even be more wrong is to withhold proof of what is quite possibly an endangered, very radical new species that we had no idea existed on this planet, and to withhold that for $20,000. Every moment that film, if it is real, is being held, it's quite possible that the time we have to study these things is ticking away. And maybe we'll never get the chance to, and maybe this film isn't the proof we're looking for, but maybe it is. And if it is, it's exceedingly wrong to hold up $20,000. So I kind of hope to some extent that the film will be a sort of call to action for even perhaps the lawyer who owns it to realize that this is not, for one thing, he's not going to get paid, And second, that it's not exactly going to look good on him that he's doing.
Okay. Well,
so,
then, so what you're going to do is you're going to go up there. Are you going to spend some time sitting on the shore watching for chance?
I am actually, yes. There's a plan I have outlined. I'm going to be there for 3 days. Most of those days are going to be interviewing eyewitnesses and talking to researchers. But luckily, the researchers I've been talking to are very friendly people, and they are very willing to bring us to locations that are very significant to Champ sightings, one of which is actually the mouth of the Asable River, which feeds into Lake Champlain, where the film was actually shot. We're also going to be camping on the shore of the lake, either at the mouth of the Asable River or on an island in the middle where there have been numerous Champ sightings, some of which have actually described these animals as sunbathing. So, you know, if we're lucky and these animals do exist, we'll get to see something, perhaps even coming up onto the shore for a bit.
That would be great. And normally they find them in the warmer weather, sunbathing.
Yes, that is one thing I've noticed quite frequently, is that these are actually very seasonal reports. There's a certain location that is actually it's on prior property. Even I'm not really allowed to know much information about it. But the information that I do know essentially states there appear to be seasonal sightings of these kind of large creatures that hunker down into this this marsh area. And they do that, it seems, near the end of, I think it's either the beginning or the end of the fall, which is what the property owners say is happening. And in the spring, there's activity again, and then they're not there for the summer or the winter. So what that seems to suggest is that whatever these animals are, whether they're actually seeing champs or whether they're seeing large mammals of some kind, are coming in to this marsh area and staying there for the cold season and then coming back out during the hot season, which is exactly what you'd expect of a marine reptile. So that's exceedingly significant, and I really hope to be able to get something in the film about that.
Yeah, well, I tell you what I'll do. I need to get you a copy of two of my articles that are in the book, this damn book that never seems to be able to get out, The Lizard Man Companion. And one is about the weather and Lizard Man. Mm. And I want to get that to you, and that might map over to sightings of Champ. And, I mean, do we have... I saw that there are like 200 sightings. Has anyone graphed those by year?
You know, I think we're kind of beginning to get into the phase where data analysis is starting like that. I think the people to talk to for that would probably be Scott Martis and Katie Elizabeth, because they document things the most. And
I would like to help you on that particular chapter, because we have done that with Lizard Man. And we have found some very interesting, correlations between weather patterns and sightings of Lizard Man way back to 1880. Okay? And I really haven't told this. So I would like to, you know, I'd be glad to help you on that one, because that's something that I have a little experience with. And I haven't wanted to release it just yet. It might be better to release it if I could also take a look at the Champ sightings and see if there's some type of correlation, which there might be. But we'll talk about that later.
Absolutely.
Offline, if that's all right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. Now, I've got two people that I want to ask, two of our co-hosts. First of all, Papa Strode, I know that you live in and around Jacksonville, North Carolina, and Emerald Isle, and you're out there in the marshy areas and everything of the East Coast. Have there ever been any reports of strange marine animals that you're aware of in that area? I've always wanted to ask this question, and I finally get a chance to ask it.
From time to time, You know, there's been some unexplained occurrences for mostly fishermen that I talk to. Especially night situations where they fish, night fishing and so forth, where they see strange, unexplained, phenomena, you might say, or creatures they can't really place a label on. There's been a few occasions.
That's
you know what I mean?
That's great to know.
But mostly what I've heard is from, like, fishermen who fish at night.
Okay. Because I am correct that, Onslow and Carteret County, there's plenty of water and marshy areas, correct?
Oh yes. It's reminiscent rather of Mississippi. Because anybody who's around Mississippi knows a lot of swamp land that way. So, it's funny you should say that because my yard was some dead bats, right? Evidently, there's a although my cats or Dorothy one has been playing with bats at night. I was like, what are these bats doing? These little bats doing laying around, you know what I mean? Crazy. I didn't know, you know, bats were that frequent here, but evidently they are. So,
I'll tell you what, Papa, I would love to get up there, kind of take a look. I'm familiar with you enough that I know you have a farm. And then you have, you've got other places that you and Dorothy haunt, to put it politely. But I would love to come up there and see some of those, and maybe we can talk to some of those fishermen. I mean, because I hadn't really normally when I am dealing with entities, I'm normally dealing with Bigfoot, the Stam, and. So anyway, I'd like to talk with you.
Occasionally, I would hear something. Yeah. Occasionally, I hear something from one. Occasionally, I hear a story every once in a while from one, like, during those hunters here as well. I know some hunters that tell a story every now and then about something they can't explain. They see in the woods, et cetera. But mostly it's fishermen that get a lot of the.
That's great. And with Carac doing this research on Champ, I think it might be a good time because, you know, with this poor book that may finally get out, it might be a good time to put more of an emphasis. I've also got a very good friend over in California, Preston Dennett. Now, I don't know if y'all know him or not, and I've interviewed him a couple times here on Scarycast, but Preston has, he talks about unidentified submerged objects, and he has hinted around at creatures, but he's never really talked about them. And so I think it's about time, because Preston's got a brand new book out, and we might just need to get Preston back on here to talk about his new book, Unidentified Submerged Objects Part 2, I think is what it's called. And he's really cool. He's an accountant. And as soon as 5 o'clock hits on Friday, he is out there looking in the water for things. And so I need to get him over here. That's a good thing. We need to talk about it. And Carac, again, just some of this information that we can find down here might be good collateral information to help you with. I think it's all related, don't you, Carac?
Well, absolutely. I think that at least in terms of the significance of the method of analysis, I think that it's utterly not only spectacular, but really it's needed, especially for the Lizardman Companion. I mean, I don't think anyone's ever attempted to really analyze the statistical data behind Lizardman reports.
Well,
I think that that's a
we'll
very
probably put this in Volume 2 of that, but still we got some time. We got about a year. If I can ever get this thing out in the next month. So we'll talk about that. Now, my other person I want to talk to is Devin. Now, Devin and I are working right now on the project of the lizard people of Los Angeles. And that project is going to move us all the way up to Mount Shasta, which I think is pretty fabulous. But Devin, have you heard, I mean, because we'll say that now you're a native of L.A. and Hollywood. And you've heard most of the stuff that goes on, correct?
Yep.
Have you heard of any types of marine unknown animals out there in the L.A. area?
I can't think of any marine ones. I know there's one out in the mountains, out, you know, by Palm Springs, which is on the edge of the desert. That's kind of like a Bigfoot, but that one is named Taquits or Taquits. But I haven't heard of any marine ones yet. I'll have to do some asking around. But John, there was one thing I learned after the Lizard Man Festival that I didn't know about at that time, but I did hear the tunnels. From downtown L.A., supposedly there are extensions from those tunnels that go all the way out to the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Well, you give us a year and a half, and we will have a lot of this between going to, let's say, Jacksonville, North Carolina, the area where Papa Stroh is, and going out to where you are, and then, of course, with a tour up to Rachel, Nevada, and then up to Mount Shasta, and then hopefully Scarycast can get up to Carex area when he's doing some of the research, so that we can do our collaborative kind of research that would help him, but in no way would overshadow what he's doing. But you know, maybe we can figure all this out. Now, Tony, I did not talk to you. But I'm getting ready to hit you here. Do you have any lake monsters or any lore up there in the world capital of murder?
No. It's all cryptids up here. You know, it's a Bigfoot, and that there's actually been a Mothman sighting. Darla and I are. And there's not a lot of people know that. There was 2-3 years ago a Mothman sighting here and UFOs, but nothing in the water that I know about.
Okay, well, I've got my list here because I've got to get Devin my book. Not my book, but the book on Our Man in Havana. I need to email you tonight. I'm going to put Tony, and I'm going to send you the Mothman chapter of my book, and I need to send that to you to see if you can find anybody else that has had an experience similar to that. I know I promised, but tonight, once this show is over, and once I've done my call, I'm going to do a call around for sure tonight, and in Carac, that means you're not excluded from that. I like to call everybody when I can, but I need to get that to you. So if you can get any information on Mothman sightings, kind of like my experience, probably about 20 years ago, you know, that we can kind of do it and kind of pull all this together in the various areas. So,
right.
I will do that. I'm glad you mentioned that, because you and Darla. Now, do you mind just telling us a little bit about Darla? Because she's actually she's a famous person when it comes to working with police departments. God forbid, with what's going on. But you know, can you tell us just a little bit about her? She was one of your co-authors, isn't she?
Yeah, Darla helped me tremendously with the book. We're going to actually start on another one here next month about cryptids. But she's just a wonderful person to work with. I've known her since she's a teenager. She actually my partner, fella I used to teach martial arts with years and years ago. She was one of our students in the 80s. That's how, you know, and she's worked with police, you know, the local police to solve a whole case, well, actually to identify a victim from 1969 that was found here in Harlan County. And they finally did it through DNA evidence. And Darla did a wonderful job with that. She's very, very analytical, wonderful person. And I can't remember the name, Mountain Jane Doe may be the name of the book, but she actually identified Mountain Jane Doe. And she's done a lot of work in that arena, as well as written several books about ghost stories and hauntings and things locally. So she's very, very, very talented lady.
But if I'm not mistaken, Tony, she has worked with police departments and given some psychic guidance that has helped. Is that correct?
I do not know. Now, that part I do not know. I know that she's worked helping with solve that one cold case, and she very well may have. We know she's not mentioned it to her. We've not talked about that. But one thing that we have talked about is, you know, trying to use, you know, spirit boxes or ghost boxes and go to like where Mountain Jane Doe was found and some more of these, unsolved murders, and maybe trying to glean some information that way. But as far as her giving psychic help, you know, I don't know. She could have, but I'm not aware.
I just get the feeling that she has. That's all I've got to say. So we'll all talk about that. We want to get her on, if we can, when you talk about Manzo and these other projects, because I think it's important. People really do like this. And again, just the quick thing, Papa Stroh, thank you for introducing me to Brady Hicks. And we are now ScaryCast being on VOC Nation on Friday nights at 11 p.m., leading right into the Stroh Zone. We're very lucky that you have done this for us, and more people can hear us. And if any of you are out there that know anything, please, you know, just go to scarycast.com or just go to ScaryCast on Facebook and send a message, because we need all the stories that we can get. We'll help verify them. We'll help do everything we can. Because as I look at it, and I'll go ahead and say this, and then Kara, I'm going to get back to our guest. But in the year 1900, if you had told me, and if I was a citizen of 1900, if you'd have said one day there will be a little device the size of a note card, 3 inches by 5 inches, that's not much thicker than that, and we could look at it, it's a little black device, and we could talk to China on it in 100 years, I would have looked at you like you'd lost your mind. And that's called a cell phone. And we're right now in the world of getting through to decent paranormal research. I am amazed that with what the spirit box can do, and Tony, I think I want you to weigh in on this, and then we're going to get back to Carrick. I am amazed that university professors, I mean, I was threatened with my job. I was threatened to be fired to teach statistics with the Zener cards that were developed by J.B. Ryan at the Ryan Institute of Parapsychology. I was threatened with my job to do that. And I just thought it was real, real crummy. But Tony, don't you think that what we are endeavoring to figure out today will be commonplace knowledge in 100 years?
I think that if things keep going like they are, that yes, I mean, you're going to, they're going to come up with something that's revolutionize spirit communication. You know, Tesla and Edison were in competition with early forms of spirit communication, because spiritualism in the early 1900s, very popular. Edison, the board, he was sitting on the board of GE, and when the board got wind of his work, they told him he had to cease and desist because they didn't want to be associated, that GE company to be associated with that. And they were actually, Edison was actually catching Spirit Communications. Tesla, he was, you know, a century ahead of his time. He believes, as I do, that it's sound and vibration and radio waves that will crack the code. I think it could, because everything has a vibratory frequency. And it's no different from tuning a radio in. Once we figure what that frequency is, how to harness it, how to use it, I think that's where your breakthrough is going to come through at.
Right. I'm glad you said that. And now, Papa Stroh, as you know, when we were working with Mike Roberts on that series Vaughn, and I was putting together the artwork for the superhero, the 40s superhero. He was a black man, and he was going to do great things. And unfortunately, Vaughn was not very successful. But we actually had a follow-up story that featured you and Nikola Tesla based on and that particular thing. And, you know, we were trying. I know you might remember that I said that, but unfortunately, Vaughn did not do very well. But do you have any thoughts about how the future will play out with all of these new inventions that we've got, the spirit boxes and things, and all the research? Because research is being very active. So what are your thoughts on – I'm going to ask you to be a futurist, if I may. In 100 years, where do you think we'll be on this type of research?
Well, at the rate we're going, you're going to see a lot of jobs that are pertained by – the human race be taken over by technology, more or less.
Even more than we've got now, you're right.
Yeah, a lot more robots, a lot more drones, a lot more, believe it or not, surveillance, if you will, in which it's a catch-22, double-edged sword, if you will. I mean, robots, you know, they're like any other machine. They're programmed to do what we tell them to do, but at the same token, there are certain things that we can do that robots can't do, more or less. And I think that's going to be kind of one of the main issues going forward with this new technology that we're going to be receiving, is the fact that even though robots are programmed to be functional, to be productive, at the same token, when it comes to decision-making, you know, we have a brain, and whereas robots are just doing what they're being told, and they're just being told what information is pumped into them, more or less, and they have the capacity to think and rationalize like we do. So I think that will be a main factor, even though we will have the new technology going forward, that we will still have the advantage to rationalize and think. And all that. So it's a double-edged sword, like I said. I mean, between efficiency and everything versus it's a battle of quantity over quality. And we win every time as far as quality goes. So we'll see.
We try. Very good. Thank you, kind sir. And Devin, we never can forget Hollywood, can we?
Nope.
We can never forget Hollywood, because that's where this entire business started, from Edison to Tesla, who got moved in other directions. But, you know, obviously Edison had the first film studio and everything. But what I wanted to ask you is, when we look in the next 100 years, you're out there in the Los Angeles area. I know you when we'd always say Hollywood, but you're in the Los Angeles area, which is one of the true technological hotspots in the world. And what do you see in terms of exploring the paranormal based on your experience of living there in the next 100 years? Because, I mean, you see, unlike us, I mean, you know, Papa Stroh's in eastern North Carolina. I'm in Myrtle Beach. Robin is in the Midlands of South Carolina. Tony is in Harlan, Kentucky. You're the one person that we've got that we can count on to know kind of where technology is going. What do you think is going to happen? The research that the CARAC is doing, the research that I'm doing, the research that we're all doing together, what do you see in 100 years that the technology is going to do? Now, this is, I hope you don't find this an unfair question, because we never talked about this, but it's a good question. What do you think the technology yeah. that you're seeing out there is going to do for this type of research?
Yeah, well, kind of like CARAC said, I mean, things are just moving so quickly. I think now with technology becoming more available, you know, cheaper, more affordable for people, and, you know, even on your phone, there's so many different apps you can download to help you in whatever you're looking for. And also, I think with social media bringing people together that are all working on the same thing, I think we're going to see just exponential leaps in the types of things we can pick up using technology, you know, things that we can't even imagine right now. Because, you know, who would have thought, you know, back in the 1980s, who would have believed you could have a phone in your pocket that would be a camera, a video camera, a computer, a recording studio, you know, everything that a phone can do nowadays. So, yeah, I think we'll just see huge leaps forward as people collaborate together on new technology.
You're 100% right. I know you're right. And you know you're right. I mean, anybody can. So CARAC, back to you, our guest. You're going to do this project. What is your estimated time? What is your ETA for finishing this? Is this like 1 year or 2 years? And then where are you going to go after that? Because I know that, you know, as an author here, as me, I know where I'm going to go. So tell us, answer that question. That's an important question for you.
Well, I've always been really just, you know, obsessed with, I would really love to make the kind of cryptozoology documentaries that I think I would have liked to see when I was really just starting to get into this field. So at least the Baudette film being my first documentary, I'm actually hoping to have it out by the end of this year, because we're filming there for 3 days, and that's actually the entirety of the documentary right there. And I'm hoping that I'll be able to crank out the full thing probably by Christmas. So it shouldn't be too long. I've got a few overarching projects. I've been working on a documentary for, you know, 3 years now called The Wood Ape, and it's about new Sasquatch sightings. You know, God knows I'm not getting complete, because that's run into a lot of issues, but that's okay, because it's that overarching project that I don't necessarily need to get done right away. I think what I would say is next, specifically, is I'm actually looking to film a Pukwudgie documentary about a year from now, called Wild Men of the Wampanoag. And are you familiar with Pukwudgie?
Now, I am, because I have had the pleasure to interview Robin from up in Toronto, Robin Moonson. Can you tell everybody just what the Pukwudgie is?
Right. So the Pukwudgie is this kind of this very strange bit of cryptozoology that really is kind of extended a bit more into the general high strangeness 14 realm, where it's this kind of, it's almost like a trickster figure in a lot of native mythology, particularly Wampanoag, which is where the word Pukwudgie comes from. That means little wild man that vanishes in the native language. And they're kind of these, there are fairy folk, I guess you could say, in a way, but they're described as these kind of small human-like beings that resemble non-human primates, because they're kind of covered in hair, but they have these
there's
large
a little people,
someone,
correct?
Yeah, they're a little people phenomenon. They have these large ears, and, you know, they're occasionally reported with clothes, sometimes not with clothes. Sometimes they act as though they're, or they allegedly act as though they're very intelligent, and sometimes they're a bit more impulsive in their behavior. It's been kind of hard for people to have a general consensus on what the definition of energy is. But they're definitely some kind of phenomenon, whether they're cultural, physical, zoological, psychological, who knows. But there's not really a solely Pukwudgie documentary out there. Now, that being said, some documentaries have touched upon it. I actually got the opportunity last year to film a documentary called Pine State Phantoms. And Pine State Phantoms, among hauntings and UFO sightings, also covers a few Pukwudgie sightings. And there's a sequel coming out, I think this year, that will delve a bit more into the Pukwudgie phenomenon. And it's a very interesting part of especially New England culture. But what's so interesting, too, is that it kind of permeates into other areas of the country. There's Pukwudgie sightings from Oklahoma, from Texas, from these places that weren't, New England or even Wampanoag-specific areas. So it's a very interesting phenomenon. I'm really looking forward to kind of fleshing that out in this documentary.
Okay, that's great. And I certainly want to put you in touch with Robin up in Toronto. Because she is probably the most knowledgeable person in the world in that field. So I need to put you in touch with her, and we'll do that in the next week or so. She's a good friend of mine. And again, that's what I like to do. I like to try to get people hooked up together so that we can do better research so that in 100 years we can actually talk about, golly, how far back were we and we just didn't know anything. So anyway, I tell you what, I think we only, as Papa Stroh has taught me, we're at 8 minutes and 23 seconds, and I want to ask everybody for their closing thoughts. And Robin apparently was not able to join back with us, but we'll get her hooked in with all this because I think she'll enjoy it and talking about it. So I'm going to go in the following order. You can do a plug of what you're doing, what you've got going on, what you're thinking, and whatever. I'm going to do it in the following order. I'm going to do it with Tony Filosi, then we're going to do Papa Stroh, then we're going to do Devin, and then we're going to do our guest, Carrack. So, Tony, what you got to plug? You got a big thing to plug, don't you?
Oh, yeah. We've just gotten the Manzo Shepherd story done, so hopefully be up on it's up on Lulu now, Lulu.com, and should be in Barnes & Noble and Amazon fairly quickly. And we are going to start work next month on an upcoming book about local cryptids. It should be very interesting, everything from Bigfoot to the Mothman to goblins and things like that, because I know everyone's heard of Hellier, you know, where they talk about the goblins. The Pine Mountain chain, which is here in Harlan, Pike County, where a lot of that takes place, is maybe an hour or so from here, an hour and 15 minutes. And the Pine Mountain chain ends, portion of it ends right there in Pike County, close to where the Hellier is. So, we're going to try to draw some parallels maybe between that, because of the cave systems inside of the mountain, the underground rivers and cave systems. So that's what I have going on right now.
Well, that's great, and you and I need to talk tomorrow, because I am getting a booth at the Little Green Men Festival in Kelly, Kentucky, and Shane Hollis will be there with me, and I'd love to have you and your crowd there with us, and we'll have a grand time. Guarantee you, we will be the most popular tent, booth, or whatever at that entire event, and you know that, right?
That if we're not, we're going to have the most fun of anybody there.
We'll be the most popular one, so that's great. All right. You know what? And I probably got the whole order wrong. So my next one is Papa Stro. What have you got going on? We're so glad that you're part of Scarycast and Murder 123, which is every Monday night now. And it's going to be, you know, broadcast on BSC Nation. So what have you got going on?
Well, tomorrow night, I'll be one of the hosts for In the Room podcast with Brady Hicks, Cassie Fitzpatrick, Derek McDonald, Matt Grimm, and myself. We'll be interviewing a special guest and then calling listeners from all over. This Thursday night, WCW Retro, yours truly, Papa Stro, will be talking a little news, old school matches, dream matches, et cetera. It's always a good time on WCW Retro. And this Friday night will be the Stro Zone, another episode of the Stro Zone. And it'll be at midnight Eastern Standard Time this Friday night. And our feature this Friday night will be another than Vampire Over London, starring Bela Lugosi. And this film is about a mysterious figure known as the Vampire, comes to England to complete experiments with his mad bid to gain control of the world. And when the radar control robot he ordered is delivered mistakenly to Mother Riley, the Vampire, through radar control, has the robot transplant itself as well as Mistress Mother Riley to the proper destination. So Mother Riley goes into a world of side-splitting action to determine effort to frustrate the plans of the sinister Vampire. So definitely tune in to watch Vampire Over London this Friday night at midnight Eastern Standard Time.
It's also called Mother Riley and the Vampire. I've seen it. It's a great film.
Yes, and you can watch it on my Facebook page this Friday night at midnight, facebook.com/StroTheMaestro, just like it sounds. So it's I'm looking forward to it.
All right, and we will be putting that up on Scarycast because we'll have some visitors there, and we want them to go right over there and watch that, and I will be there. And it's going to be – I love that film. It's funny, but it's really creepy. Now, it is.
Yeah.
It's a great film. You as usual, you pick out the winners, so you got the winners right now. I'm going to ask you a personal favor.
Sure.
If we can schedule this at an appropriate time, one of the great lost, C-grade horror films is the Cape Canaveral Monsters. And I watched it, and you know what? It's scary. It's really a scary film. The Cape Canaveral Monsters from 1960, and I loved it, and I wanted to mention that to you. So yeah, just check it out, and maybe I can join you on that one or something. But it's a great film, Cape Canaveral Monsters. But you're doing Mother O'Riley Meets the Vampires. This is that's the greatest. You get the 10 out of 10. Papa Stro, so thank you very much.
I can't wait. So excited.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I'll be there watching. So, and we'll be right after our VSC Nation broadcast. Now, Devin Tate.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, I had such a great time with the Lizard Man Festival. So my video on the LA Lizard People, that whole thing is still up on my Facebook page if anybody wants to check that out. And then yesterday, I don't know if you know, that June 21st is called Make Music Day. All around the world, people perform music, normally outside for people to hear, but this year we did a lot of it online. So I did a few songs online on my Devin Tate Music page on Facebook Live, which is still up there. I did a few songs off of a new CD that I have coming out later this summer. So stay tuned for that.
Well, that's great, and thank you. And now, did I get everybody? I got Karak, I got Papa Stro, I got Tony, I got Devin. And I'll do me, and I'll say we'll be back next week on Scarycast, and we will be featuring Tony Filosi and his new book on Manzo Shepard. And it is a privilege to work with my family. And Robin will be back. She just, I don't know, who knows, something happened, and we may even talk about that next week. But anyway, thanks a lot. I love everybody. You guys are the best family I've ever had that's not part of my regular family, and thank you so much. We'll see you next week. Everybody, get back here. Get back here. Scarycast.
Will do.
Love you guys.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Good night.